As many as 1 million Americans live with Parkinson's disease, which is more than the combined number of people diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, and Lou Gehrig's disease. But the good news is that living with this debilitating disease today is not always as debilitating as once thought. And here with more on all of this is Dr. Dragos Mihaila. He is the Assistant Professor of Neurology and the Director of the Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Clinic at the Syracuse Veterans Administration Medical Center and at Upstate Medical University. And Carol Sames, she's an exercise physiologist and the Director of the Vitality Fitness Program at Upstate Medical University. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Mihaila, let's begin with helping us understand, what exactly do we mean when we talk about Parkinson's disease? What is it?
Well, Parkinson's disease carries the name of James Parkinson, who described this condition in 1817 when he personally examined three patients, and he observed three other patients on the streets of London carrying the same manifestations of physical disabilities with tremor, with slowness of movements, and difficulties with walking. Since then, we have made some progress in describing more about this condition, which carries now Dr. James Parkinson's name.
So it's a nervous, it's a progressive disorder?
It is a progressive disorder of the nervous system, which affects predominantly the dopamine-producing neurons. Dopamine is a chemical that is used by the brain to smooth out the movements, to initiate movements, and so plays a significant role in the physical abilities of everybody.
Does it come on immediately? Is it something you're struck with?
The disease does not start suddenly. It is a slowly progressive disease that may start quite slowly, usually on one side of the body, and just gradually progresses to affect the arm, the leg on the same side, then move to affect the other side as well. And in time, I'm talking about years, it affects the balance and also ability to straighten up, and affects the posture of these patients.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the symptoms. So it might start with something as simple as a tremor in one hand.
It
might
start with a simple tremor of a pinky finger or the thumb.
Wow.
And then progresses to affect the whole hand, and then maybe the leg may start in the leg, not necessarily in the hand.
So the kinds of things we see are tremor, a slowness of movement,
stiffness of the body,
rigidity.
It may start actually, the first signs you may observe is that that person does not swing their arm when they walk, which we normally do, and that may be lost.
Interesting.
I want to mention also that tremor is the most recognized sign of Parkinson's disease. However, 1 in 5 people who have Parkinson's disease never develop tremor.
Oh, that's really interesting. So what would they be developing that would show itself?
Slowness of movements. That is mandatory to have a diagnosis of Parkinsonism.
And are there
all slowness of movement?
What other kinds of symptoms? In other words, are there changes in their speech, for example, or in other abilities?
Absolutely. The speech becomes softer. The words are not really well formed.
Not articulated well.
Absolutely. And people start developing difficulties with dexterity. They may notice difficulties buttoning their buttons, brushing their teeth, even shampooing their hair. They cannot do this, you know, rhythmic movements with their hands.
Now, Carol, you also, I mean, you work as part of the Vitality Program. You have people with Parkinson's disease as part of your patients that you see. What kinds of symptoms are most prevalent that you notice in Parkinson's?
So just as Dr. Mihaila had suggested, we will see individuals who have tremor. The shuffling gait is pretty hallmark, not again in everyone, but a decreased stride, inability to flex the foot. And so the person, as they start to lose some of their postural reflexes, you start to see them stooping forward, which then, of course, puts them at high risk for falls.
So when you say shuffling gait, you mean they kind of just move one foot in front of the other
right.
very slowly?
You know, the typical gait pattern is a heel landing and rolling to toe, as Dr. Mahalia had mentioned, opposite arm to leg that's forward. And so you start to see arms that are not moving in conjunction, a smaller stride, and more of that shuffling.
How about people being frozen?
That's
something that I've heard about.
It is. It is one of the physical manifestations of Parkinson's disease that starts later than the tremor, later than the slowness of movements. And this freezing, which affects mostly the legs, it's called freezing of gait, is quite debilitating. All of a sudden, these patients cannot initiate their walking. The freezing of gait is more likely to be observed when the first steps are initiated, when people are turning, or, interesting, when they pass through a threshold like a doorway, or when they are in the front of an escalator. Don't be surprised to see a Parkinson's patient being stuck in place, unable to move.
Wow.
What is very interesting and where the Vitality Program may play a really a role is the fact that with cues, different cues like visual cues, auditory cues, these people can unblock their freezing and
really?
They can move.
So they can compensate with the right kind of training, which I really want to get to because that's what this is all about. I think
Absolutely.
The key here is that people with Parkinson's can really do something to help themselves. But I want to talk more specifically about what treatments other than intervention in terms of the exercise and the lifestyle changes. What actual medical treatments are available these days?
Well, as I mentioned, Parkinson's disease is a progressive degeneration of the brain. Unfortunately, at this point, we do not have a proven intervention that would slow down the disease progression. So the treatment addresses the symptoms, the physical problems that these patients have. And the treatment, the medical treatment, is concentrating on restoring or replacing the lack of dopamine that they have.
So there's a medicine
there are,
that allows
several medications that address this, and the most powerful drug we have for it is the drug called levodopa, which is the precursor of dopamine. The levodopa is almost like a folded in, a form of dopamine that is folded because it can pass through the barrier between the blood and the brain. So it can reach the brain. And in the brain, it unfolds and
wow.
as a dopamine.
Is that effective in
most
cases?
It is the most effective form of medication we have for Parkinson's disease.
Is that taken orally on a daily basis?
It is taken orally on a daily basis, initially taken 3 times a day, but as the disease progresses, and the longer the patients are exposed to the medication, they develop some of the unwanted side effects of these medications, which are the so-called motor fluctuations. When this medication is a short-acting drug, initially in the beginning of the therapy, people they have their own dopamine, so they can compensate. But as the disease progresses, they rely more and more on the properties of the drug. And this is a short-acting drug. So they may observe the improvement of the symptoms for an hour, 2 hours, and then gradually or sometimes suddenly they return to the state of Parkinsonism with the stiffness, with a tremor, and with the slowness of movements and difficulties walking. Also, another potential side effect of the medication, about half of the patients develop this, are the so-called dyskinesias. These are involuntary movements. Many times these movements are mild, not even observed by the patient, observed by others, but sometimes they can be severe enough to play around in disrupting the ability to walk, balance, and ability to use upper arms and hands in different activities.
So when you talk about dyskinesia in this case, it's a side effect of the drug. It's not part of Parkinson's.
Absolutely.
And some, like Michael J. Fox, for example, is to me a perfect poster child in the sense that he's been doing incredible things to raise the awareness and consciousness of the importance of helping, raising money for Parkinson's research. But he seems to have a lot of this writhing kind of movement. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
It's exactly what I'm talking about. But despite this movement, with this movement present, he's able to do everything else. When he does not have this movement, he's stiff, frozen, unable to talk, probably.
So apart from the medical intervention, which obviously is very effective, I read somewhere there are some surgical interventions been around for a bit. Tell us about that deep brain stimulation.
Deep brain stimulation has been around for a number of years, and it is a powerful way of treating the motor fluctuations and dyskinesias in Parkinson's disease. It has almost the same effect as levodopa, but provides this continuous stimulation of the...
So instead of... It's almost like a time-released capsule, so to speak.
Exactly. We call it, actually, electronic levodopa.
Oh.
This is how... It's very effective and actually can allow these patients to reduce their amount of medication they are taking. And
so how is that accomplished? What exactly, and very briefly, what exactly is done?
We are jamming bad signals in the networks in the brain.
Wow.
So this is
electronically jamming those bad signals.
So we place this DBS lead, a neurosurgeon places this deep brain stimulation lead in the brain, connects it with a pacemaker, and that pacemaker sends this high frequency, very low voltage electric current to the brain, to that specific target in the brain, the subthalamic nucleus or the globus pallidus pars interna, and that kind of jams these kind of bad signals that are probably caused by
the lack of dopamine. Wow. So
yes.
It's literally, it's like you said, it's like electronically jamming the bad signals so people can resume what their normal functioning might be.
Absolutely.
What about new research? Things like stem cell research or genetic therapy. Is any of that on the...
Of course, this is the what we are dreaming of, having a treatment that can restore the lost brain cells and stem cells has a lot of promise, but it's still a technology that is in infancy when it comes to treatment of these neurodegenerative conditions.
Right.
I have to mention that Parkinson's disease is not only a physical disorder, a physical function disorder. It affects tremendously other functions of the
central
nervous system. Cognitive function.
Cognitive
mood.
So is dementia also a factor?
Yes, it is.
But it's not the case in all people who have Parkinson's.
No, but the longer you live with Parkinson's disease, the higher is the chance of getting dementia. Autonomic dysfunction, people having difficulties maintaining the blood pressure when they are standing, they may pass out. Troubles with controlling of the bladder function.
So there's
sleep
it has
problems.
Really, so it has a very wide-ranging impact on life. Carol, that's where you come in. Tell us a little bit about what you find and what you do with patients with Parkinson's as part of the Vitality program.
Well, certainly it's important that all of us be active. And just because somebody comes in with a diagnosis of Parkinson's, that does not change. So what we want to do is we want to look at all these symptoms that we've been talking about. We also want to look at, cognitive function, and we want to look at are they cycling off some of these medications where they have on time and off time? Because certainly we don't want to have them exercising in an off time. It's not going to be effective for them. We're going to look at their balance. And so that we're going to set up a program that's going to include some range of motion.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on air. I'm Linda Cohen. I'm here with neurologist Dr. Gragos Mihaila and exercise physiologist Carol Sames. We're talking about how to live an active life with Parkinson's disease. So tell me a bit more about what exactly it is that you guys do.
So we want to do some range of motion, flexibility. We want to work on balance. We want to work on strength. We need muscle to move.
So how is it that happens? In other words, do people come on a once a week basis? Do they come multiple times a week if they're engaged in your program?
2 to 3 times a week. Generally speaking, one time a week, unless they were able to do things on their own, isn't really going to be effective. We have both a water program and a traditional land exercise program. And for some individuals that have more advanced Parkinson's, where we're really concerned about falls, the water is an ideal environment with the buoyancy and the resistance.
Is diet a part of this also? You know, when we talk about a healthy lifestyle, are you also encouraging a healthier diet overall?
Certainly we want everybody to have a healthy diet. For many people, if they've been inactive, we want them to start with activity first, talk about what's going to be safe for them, and then gradually work on more education, and that would certainly include nutrition.
Dr. Mihaila was alluding to the fact that some people, if they're given proper cues, which what I would think would come with the kind of training you're offering, they can overcome or compensate for some of the limitations of Parkinson's. What have you seen?
The frozen, absolutely. So it could be as simple as telling somebody, instead of taking a step forward because they're frozen, take a step backwards. That could be that simple.
In the little bit of time we have left, I just want to make sure. It seems to me that this whole disease entity could play a real wreak havoc in a family life and caregiver's life, and how support would probably be a very, very important thing. Is that what you're seeing, too?
Yes, absolutely. There is a significant stress on the caregivers of people who have Parkinson's disease. And this is something that we sometimes fail to address properly when we see the patients in the clinic. But family is so important. And mentioning the physical exercise, it's important that a caregiver will do the physical exercises with the patient because the dual benefit. Briefly, I want to mention that there is physical exercise has possible and neuroprotective properties. And we get more and more data, is emerging data in that field.
Wonderful. Well, we also have some information about some support groups, and we're going to have that information on our website. The Onondaga County Department of Aging and Youth is sponsoring 2 groups, and we'll have that information on our website, HealthLinkOnAir, that's one word, .org. And you're going to be participating in a mini conference on living in an active life with Parkinson's disease on September 12th coming up. So we will have that information as well on our website. I want to thank you both for coming in. My guests have been Dr. Dragos Mihaila, and he's the neurologist, assistant professor of neurology, and the director of the Parkinson's Movement Clinic at Upstate Medical University, and also Carol Sames, and she is an exercise physiologist and the director of the Vitality Fitness Program at Upstate Medical University.